I'll be honest, I've been kind of staying away from ChatGPT.
Okay.
Our users, like for my brand, they're not coming from ChatGPT. Like that's not our target users. Like business users are using Claude, Perplexity, or Copilot. Yes, traffic from LLMs is still considerably smaller than traditional search, but it is also exponentially more conversional. What content are AI crawlers or agents interacting with more often?
So the LMS text, there's so many interpretations of it, how it should work. Is it an instruction manual?
I think it is a, you know, I think of it as it's the elevator pitch for your company.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Hier hörst du Insights zu Digital Marketing Strategien und Technologien. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
So today at the Marketing Meets Technology podcast, we have an SMX special. And the cool thing about this is we're going to talk about really interesting topics. We're going to talk about how LLM crawlers are actually working and what they can see and what they can't see, because I think that is one of the really big topics out there right now. We see all on our service, we see ChatGPT coming by, we see Gemini coming by, we see all these other LLM crawlers and AI crawlers coming by. And it's really interesting how they work, because they do work a little bit different to the classic Googlebot. And then we're also going to talk about rendering, why that is so important, and what has changed there. Because obviously your site needs to be rendered for Google to see it and understand it. And also for, you know, for AI SEO, it also needs to be understood what is on the page. And this can make or break your ranking. So that's what we're going to talk about. And I have a really special guest here. And my guest today is someone who genuinely defies the usual job title. Sam Torres is a developer, a data architect, and a technical SEO all rolled into one. And she used that rare mix to solve problems that most people don't even know that they exist. And she's currently the senior manager of technical SEO at Pipedrive. You probably all know Pipedrive, pretty big company. And she also, in the past, founded a really nice agency called the Gray Dot Company, where she helped brands turn messy, complex data problems into strategies and actually move the needle. And if you've been around on some conferences like Brighton SEO, SMX, or PopCon, you've probably seen her on stage. And she's known for being sharp, refreshingly honest, and a bit, little bit funny while she's at it. She's also one of the most generous voices in the Women in Tech SEO community. So yeah, who could better explain how rendering works, how crawlers work? So it's a real pleasure to have you here, Sam. And yeah, let's get into these crazy topics.
Thank you so much for having me. And those were some really kind words. So thank you. I'm excited.
Me too. So yeah, what have you been working on in the past? I mean, AI and AI SEO and geo, I don't know what you call it in the US, to be honest. What is the naming you call the whole AI search thing?
I think that's still highly contested. So like my CMO likes to call it GEO. I prefer AI search, because to me that just what makes the most sense. But yeah, I think across my team, we've probably used all of them. So I think it's all fair game right now, and I'm still not seeing one really come out. I did see an interesting study not too long ago, and it looks like SEOs, we have all these different names, but then if we go to like just digital marketers or more broad careers, they're actually calling it AI search.
Yeah.
So that's why that's what I'm trying to call it, because I feel like that's what the larger audience is really coming to, and we need to meet them where they are.
Let's hope so, because AI search defines it much better than geo does. In Germany, people are using geo a lot, but I prefer AI search because it is more what it really is, because it is, I don't know, it makes more sense to say we're helping with AI search than to say I'm helping you with geo, where everybody's like, what is geo? But yeah. But there's been a lot of change, and I would just like to hear your thoughts on what's been happening like in the last 12 or 18 months for you, and how we've seen the changes moving from SEO to AI search, and, you know, maybe some of the things that you've already noticed.
Yeah, I think the thing to stress right now for me, like what's been kind of defining my last 18 months, is it's a lot of testing. All of this is very nascent. It's in its infancy. So things aren't really set. And obviously there's a lot of black boxes when it comes to these AI or LLM platforms. So I think testing is really what we have to keep doing to try to understand them. As far as the more standard like playbooks or plays that we're making right now, I do think it's been kind of fun, because we're coming back to, like, from a content strategy perspective, we're coming back to what is the brand or what are the products? What's the service actually about? Because I think really what has happened in, with search recently, you know, Google, we're seeing it a bunch, but then also with LLMs, we need to get back to talking about what we're an expert on and all of this fluff and extra bloat that, you know, write 100 blogs a month, you know, that that tactic that was used for so long, it stopped working. And now we're actively seeing it hurt brands if you have that much extra fluff and extra off-topic content because it's diluting your expertise. So I would say that's been a lot of kind of the nitty-gritty work is figuring out, you know, from these now very large content libraries, because these companies have been creating content for 10 plus years, what actually matters? And then also, how do we set up systems and processes so that we can be adding unique POVs, point of views, or just more thought leadership to our content? Because that's what people want. That's what the users want. They want authentic experiences. So how do we give that to them? But also at the same time, marketing teams are getting smaller because of AI tools or just because of the impact from what's going on in the economy, which you and I talked about a little bit before we started recording. Yeah. So I think it's really right now, it's really difficult, but we're trying to figure out how to balance this idea of scaling ourselves and scaling our output, but keeping the authenticity and the expertise. So that's a lot of the work that I've been doing of, you know, automation and pipelines and how do we 10x ourselves with these tools to then also enable us to have time to be testing so that we can understand how these tools work and how they interpret us. And, you know, I'm not a fan of let's figure out how to game the system, but are there patterns, are there trends that emerge that we can learn from to continue moving in the right direction?
So maybe tell us a bit about the testing you did and maybe some findings that are interesting to share.
Yeah. So first thing is really just trying to understand what can LLM see, which is really, I mean, the bulk of what I think we're going to talk about today. Yeah. Because of things like, yes, traffic from LLMs is still considerably smaller than traditional search, but it is also exponentially more conversional. So how do we create more of those experiences? How do we create more of those moments? I think requires us to understand how do you know whether you're showing up in the result? How do you know what an LLM actually understands about you as an entity? Yeah. So a lot of the testing, you know, in the beginning, it was very manual of just, I'm just going to try all the different models with the same, you know, 20 to 50 questions and see what the LLMs know about me. And I think that's usually a great place to start if you don't have tools. From there, it's looking into your log files. So what content are AI crawlers or agents interacting with more often? Are you able to see any kind of trends between visibility or citations, traffic conversions from LLM traffic to the content that they're actually ingesting? And then also just doing those tests of, all right, talking in Claude or talking in Gemini, go pull this page. Can they actually see it? Now, I will say web fetches is obviously very different than the crawlers they might have. Those are actually two different sets of technology. It's been a lot of testing of like that, of just trying to take all these different data sets and find out if there's anything directional that we can lean on. Because I do think any hard numbers, we just can't trust because they're too much of a black box. We just need to look at the trends, at the directionally, where is it going? How do these relate? So findings from there is really just, if your site uses a lot of JavaScript, you're probably not having as much visibility or, you know, LLMs are not able to consume the content that you have. So it's almost like, if we remember what Google was like pre-2018, if you had content in JavaScript, Google wasn't seeing it. That I even remember back in those days being like, this is JavaScript, we have to change it immediately. Like, we're almost back to that, just when it comes to LLMs and agents. And I do always like to specify, like, LLM crawlers and agents. They're two very different use cases, but they're both new audiences that we kind of have to account for because there are now so many different surfaces and so many different ways that users might find you. So all of that to say, it's been interesting to kind of go backwards on when it comes to rendering. How is your content actually being presented? How is it being engaged with? While, you know, Google can render it just fine. But it's also always been a question of, are you making it worth their while? And you kind of have to redo that now for LLM crawlers. That was a really long answer, and I hope that helps.
Yeah, it helps. And we have opened two very interesting topics. So for one, the content discussion is definitely something we should look at maybe as next question. And the first question I would have is, maybe you can explain a bit more how these different crawlers work. So you said WebFetch, you said agents, you said the Google crawler. But then ChatGPT must have a crawler, and Bing might have a crawler. Mm-hmm. And then there is also this machine that ChatGPT, for instance, calls with the faceted search, and then it just gives back citations and it builds the answer out of that. So maybe take us through how these different, how this whole system works, so we can, as SEOs and geos and AI search experts, understand a little bit more what's happening and how the different systems work. So to understand how we can make the pages better and make them easier readable and save resources.
Yeah, all good questions. Yeah, so crawlers with our traditional search engines, so Google, Bing, they use headless browsers and kind of, you know, make that whole experience. So they've been able to render JavaScript. For Google, it was confirmed back in 2018, while the others have kind of followed suit in their own time. Now, when it comes to LLM crawlers, the majority of them are using just simple HTML fetches when they're doing any kind of crawling. Mm-hmm. So any of your scripts, they're not getting executed. You know, with Google, we've been talking about now for years at this point how there is a an HTML queue and a rendering queue, or really we call it the crawl queue, and then rendering queue. Those are two separate processes. Basically, for LLM crawlers, that second process doesn't even exist. And the reason for that is because it's very expensive to do, right? We see that Google's own costs for continuing to crawl the web, those have gone up, which is also why I think they don't index as much as they used to, because you got to make it worth the resources to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, in short, LLM crawlers, they're just doing simple HTML fetches. So all they're seeing is that like initial HTML response. So a way to see that, how could you recreate that as a user or as an SEO, is to actually, when you go to your URL in a browser, go ahead and view your page source. That's going to be what the majority of LLM crawlers are seeing. Whereas like Googlebot and Bingbot, they see what the user sees and like the, the developer, like,
yeah, the developer view, console.
Yes, I mean, there we go. Whoo, brain fart. Totally forgot the name of something I use all the time, the inspect tool.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So that's the big difference there. Now, what's interesting though is that, you know, like I said, that's kind of the base of LLM crawlers. They're just doing the HTML fetch or request. There are times where sometimes LLM crawlers access the rendered version of a page, and that's because they've been pulling it from Google's cache. Mm-hmm. Or that's really the biggest reason I've been able to consistently find. So it's not to say that if your content is dependent on JavaScript to render, that it's completely invisible to LLMs, but you're making it a whole lot harder for LLMs to actually see it. So obviously that's pretty problematic. And anything that still requires like a click or user engagement, Googlebot still generally doesn't see those, and LLM crawlers certainly don't. There are some exceptions to these LLMs, right? So Gemini, it has access to Googlebot, so it can usually get some of that rendered code for you pretty well. But yeah, it's what we're seeing is LLM crawlers, their crawl technology is just not as sophisticated as Google, which makes sense. Oh, yeah. That I do think at some point, like OpenAI, Anthropic, like one of them's got to buy a crawler at some point. Like I think we're just going to see that because they need content. They need to keep feeding the model. Like it's like feeding the beast. They need to keep going. And so that's going to be one of their next avenues, I think, to actually getting that. But for now, basically, if you don't see it in the view page source, an LLM is not dependably seeing it either. Now, agents get a little bit more interesting, right? Because agents are operating on behalf of users. So when it comes to agents, they can be scripted to do all kinds of things. So they're a little bit of, can this agent see this? Well, it depends. Was the agent written to execute and to take the resources to get those renderings? So I think, you know, it's important to understand that agents, again, are a little bit of a, it depends on what the user designed it to do. But I do also think we need, as technical SEOs, as SEOs, we need to start thinking about how would agents interact with our site. Mm-hmm. So like for Pipedrive, we're a CRM. So we're gathering the requirements. We're looking at, all right, if someone wanted to sign up for a trial using an agent, can the system support that right now? Now, the decision of whether we're going to let users do that, that's above my pay grade, and I'll let somebody else make that decision, right? But at least to know, like, can we support this from a tech standpoint? I think that's something that kind of naturally falls into the tech SEO wheelhouse because of all this work we've done with crawlers our entire careers. But, you know, for e-com, right, the web MCP and how are people able to interact with products and can an agent actually go buy your product if someone's using ChatGPT, right? Like Shopify has enabled that for you know, you have the options to turn that on. So I think, you know, there are a lot of audiences, like you said, and the crawlers, it's just kind of fun to see how, like I said, the LLM crawlers, it's almost like, remember what web technology was like 10, 15 years ago. That's where they are. And it'll be interesting to see how they continue to evolve. Or like I say, do they acquire the technology? Do they make their own in-house? Do they get acquired by somebody else? You know, I think.
Or just build themselves Cloud Code.
Yeah. That's right. Cloud Code is amazing and Fable has been fun. So I get it.
Exactly. Okay. So obviously it makes sense. So the obviously like AI overviews, AI mode on Google and Gemini are allowed to use the resources of Google and can use the amazing Googlebot who we all adore, love, and pray to get more crawling budget.
Exactly.
What I have absolutely noticed is less indexing going on, but we'll come to that in a second. So obviously ChatGPT has a deal with Bing, but they also have a deal with Google. So they are allowed to do both. Now let's talk about the other ones. There's, I don't know who Anthropic actually crawls, and I don't know what Perplexity uses, and there's probably a bunch more. So they must all be stuck in the middle somewhere where they're not allowed to use great resources. And this must turn out for them to be way worse results, or they must be kind of like doing a normal call to Google and just trying to scrape the result or something like that.
Yes, I think that's what we've seen is there's a lot of scraping of Google. That's why we saw some of the changes. I think why we saw some of the changes that we did with just like Google getting rid of the N equals 100 or what
yeah,
have you.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I also just saw one of the cases got thrown out for Google and a scraper. Still for the best of my knowledge, so I could be wrong on this, but the biggest source of content is still the Common Crawl bot. Okay. So the Common Crawl, which is just, so if you're looking in your log files, it just looks like CC bot. But that is actually a third party that crawls the web at large. Google also uses them. So there's, and it's, you know, think about it like the Wayback Machine or the Archive. Yep. Like it's just kind of like this third party unbiased participant here. So still a lot of that is what's being used. And that's where, you know, we're, like I say, it's still mostly HTML fetches because rendering the web is just really expensive.
Yeah, it's super expensive.
And that's why, you know, Google's one of the few people who can actually afford to do it. Obviously, Microsoft can as well. But and my understanding is the relationship between ChatGPT and Bing, they're getting results from Bing, but they're not doing as much of the rendering. That is my understanding. But, you know, it's all
no, it makes
conversations
sense.
Behind closed doors. So
of course, I mean, I find it fascinating that basically, if you look at how LLM search or AI search works right now, is that basically anything that they would read would be taken as 100% truth. And without Google and without Bing, the indexes, which have 20 years of experience with spam content or false content, the AI results would be horrible. Horrible.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm always saying to people when they come to me and say, like, okay, how easy is it to rank on AI search? And I say, it's pretty easy, right? If you have done the right measures, but you need to be ranking in SEO. Otherwise, you have zero chance. And that is really interesting because I think without the experience of the spam team in on Googlebot, AI would not be able to do any web searches because it would be full of wrong content, advertising content, so on.
Yes.
And I think that plays a huge role. And that is really interesting. So, but have you ever heard of the mechanism that works like this? So basically, you have ChatGPT. ChatGPT puts out the fan out queries, calls Google several times, but then it doesn't call the Google index directly and gets like a search result, but it basically gets citations from the most relevant pages and uses them in a kind of instant RAG database, which then computes into an answer. And that is why there's so little links in there.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I've been kind of staying away from ChatGPT.
Okay.
So yes, I've heard about this, but our users, like for my brand, they're not coming from ChatGPT. Like that's not our target users. Like business users are using Claude, Perplexity, or Copilot.
Interesting.
Copilot is one of the ones that is giving very little information, and it's hard to kind of see where it's consuming because we can't differentiate between it and BigBot. So that one's been a little bit more fun. Probably not surprising, Microsoft is also a little bit more close to the chest on the privacy for Copilot users. Granted, they've got all these great reports that are coming out now in the Bing Webmaster Tools. But yeah, and certainly in the US, ChatGPT usage is not what it was a year ago.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the competition is really strong. Really strong. I mean, Gemini, a lot of people get Gemini for free in the workspace. So it's amazing. Yeah. And then obviously now Claude,
Claude
Cowork is just insane. So I think most businesses will be using Claude.
Yes.
And once people have gotten used to it, it would be very hard to move them away. It would be very hard. So we see it in our company. We use all of the LLMs. So we have unlimited access to Gemini because we're all using Google. And then we have ChatGPT because it was one of the first. And now we have Claude. And I do see a lot of people just enjoying Claude and getting to use the processes and using Cowork and then installing the skills and doing the connectors. And I know that ChatGPT has the same. It's called Codex, but it's a little bit too late. You know, that's the issue.
Yeah, as I do think you're right that as these brands are building all this context into whatever platform that they've chosen, you're right. It's going to be really hard to move off of that.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Okay, very interesting. Let's talk about the content topic a little bit more. So you said something. Because the cost is so high for Google to index, obviously because a million SEOs are spamming the internet with a million content articles every day that are created by ChatGPT. I think Google has to be very, very careful of what they look at and spend their time on because everything is just a remix of something that has been before. And I'm really interested on your perspective for that, how they do that right now and what the solution is maybe as a professional advertiser or a company to solve that problem, to create valuable content that actually is liked by AI and Google?
Yeah, I think there's two facets to that, honestly, and that is the content quality and then the technical signals. So content quality, I think it is, you know, we know it because they're starting to publish some of it of, you know, they're looking for unique things. If it's not new information, if it's not a new fact, then it's not going to be worth their time, right? They obviously have the index of the internet to go with it already. Now, any kind of like proprietary tools, there are there are some studies out. There's, you know, there's people much smarter than I am analyzing how do they do the content uniqueness. On the technical side, though, that's where I usually live, of really figuring out, okay, the content that we are creating, because I think there's also times where people are creating good content and it's not getting indexed. And so why is that happening? And I think it comes down to, are you giving the right signals to indicate that this is worth rendering in resources, this is worth crawl resources? Because of kind of what we mentioned earlier, of like some of these sites have gotten so bloated, they're so big, they've got, you know, so many different clusters or so many different kind of like random hallways to turn down and get lost in from a crawling perspective. When your content is tucked away or it's put into these kind of far pockets, if you're not giving the right indicators that this is worth the time, then why would a crawler decide to spend the resources? So the reason I say all that is because a lot of the web right now is using JavaScript, right? To varying degrees, right? There's all these frameworks that are 100% JS dependent. And then there's times where it's like, I just have jQuery installed for a fun little interaction with my accordions, right? Who knows? We've got everything in between. But we are seeing the rise from a web development perspective. We're seeing a lot more of these JavaScript-based frameworks pop up over the last really 3, 4, 5 years. A lot of brands are moving to like headless CMS builds, which means they're usually having some kind of JS front end. Now, like I say, the resources to render those, Google can do that. Are we making it worth their while? It's things like, what is available in that initial HTML? What's available in that server request? Are we sending page titles? Are we having the right meta directives? Are the in-body copy links, right? Are those actually available, or are we waiting for JavaScript to render to see them? So there's just kind of like this priority level of what information is being passed, where I have absolutely seen in projects where once we tweaked that, content was getting indexed much more regularly because we were making it easier for the different crawlers to know like, oh, this is what this talks about and this is why it's important. Whereas if you're hiding some of those important priority bits of information, like your page title, like your meta directives, like your H1, if you're hiding those behind JavaScript, it just looks like a blank page. And so why would anybody bother with that? So like I said, I think there's really two things going on, is that Google is tightening up the requirements for why it would care about a page from a technical perspective. And then, of course, the quality, the unique perspectives. I think that's probably where they're spending a lot of their work from an algorithm perspective. And like I said, there are much smarter people who can speak to that way more eloquently than I can.
Yeah, cool. My follow-up question would have been like, how do you think they are detecting AI content and separating it from real human content that is actually written from an expertise standpoint? Because I think that is something that is really, really hard, because I don't think that a human writes better content. Like, an average human will not write better content than an average AI. That's not possible. The AI is just better at it. But obviously an expert human will write at least a new perspective on a topic that might not have an absolute truth, compared to an AI that might only write a summary of the ideas that are available in its model or on the internet. And I really wonder how they do that right now, because we've seen at least that creating AI content at scale would work last year. But it stopped working 3 months ago.
Right. It's not working anymore. I do think sentiment and tone is a large part of at least how users are able to determine AI content versus user written, right? Because it's exactly what you were talking about, of how AI does a really good job of summarizing. They also don't often dissent, right? So they're very agreeable.
Yeah.
I do think it is an interesting topic, though, because at the end of the day, LLMs write the way that they do because of the content that they've consumed.
Yes.
Which means like their whole use of M dash and it's this, not that, or not this, it's that, that came from real human writers, right? That was something that the actual copywriters were creating. Now, of course, those are telltale signs. And obviously, you know, we're talking about scalable content that's probably going around and identifying and pulling out all of those things. But I do think it comes down to, are you putting in, you know, authentic experiences like quotes, testimonials? Are you able to put in data points that didn't previously exist? I think that's a lot of the work, at least that we're seeing from a content perspective. When we're testing those things, we're seeing a lot more success than another roundup. And yeah. Thank God those are going away.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are so annoying.
To be honest, it's like, this is like the most painful thing, is to be looking for an answer for something. And I have a really good example for this. So obviously, we did want to watch some of the World Cup games that were hosted in the US.
Of course.
There were some great games. The
they
UK
really were. Yeah.
Playing against people, Spain playing against teams, right? Germany losing against easy teams. But that is something. And then you had to, obviously each country has their own licensing settings. And It was an easy question. I asked Google, where can I see tonight's game? And AI overviews wouldn't give me an answer. So I had to click on these, like big magazine titles. And what they would do, they would describe for at least 10 sentences what football is, what the World Cup is, who's playing tonight, but they would not answer where I can watch the game.
Uh-huh.
This is the worst user experience in my life I have ever experienced. And then there was ads everywhere. So I'm really happy that this is going away, because I cannot see it anymore. And GDPR in Germany is also a huge pain. You visit a website, you have to click 10 boxes away to see the content, and it always pops up exactly. So you know content layout shift, right? As a technical SEO, right? This is the worst thing that has ever happened to me as a usability thing on a daily basis. I open a web page, it loads fast. I want to click on the product, and then the GDPR pop-up comes up, and I click on it on some of, and I can't move on.
Yeah.
So that's why I actually asked Gemini just to, you know, find me whatever, and I'll just go there and do it, and I'll not visit the pages anymore, because I'm just done with this.
Sure. Yeah. Now, as an individual user, the number of times, like, I definitely have this experience where I feel like Claude knows me as the professional, and my Gemini knows everything else about me, right? Because I've been using Google for so long, and I guess in my mind, I'm like, Google already knows all the embarrassing things about me, so I'll just continue using Gemini. But yeah, it's like, I was out shopping yesterday, and I didn't go to Google. I was just in Gemini having a conversation. Hey, they're out of stock of this.
Yeah.
Can you recommend an alternative? Because it's just, it's easier. And when they have the context of who you are and your needs,
That's why it will win. That's why AI search will win, because it's easier.
Yes.
And it's actually the laziest solutions will always win. This has always been in the world. That's why, sorry to say this, but that's why Americans will jump in the car in the driveway and drive 500 meters, half a mile or less to the next store, jump out and buy food, because it is the lazy option. And in Germany and Europe, you're not allowed to do that, basically. You get frowned upon. But it was socially acceptable, people would do this in Germany as well. And they sometimes do, right? So it is the human nature to preserve resources. It doesn't matter mental or on the body side. And that's how we humans survived. And that's why this will always be the option. And obviously people are saying, like, okay, critical thinking will go away and everything. Yes, I agree. It might go away, but it's just easier. It's just easier. And we are all to blame because we broke the web.
Yeah. Also, I'll be honest, on the critical thinking will go away, it's already not as good. Like, I mean, I have a son, he's in school, and I'm not trying to knock on him, but like, I also have friends who are college professors, and the students now, like, this is the first time in history we're seeing a decline in overall testing scores and IQ. Like, over the entirety of human history, we've seen every generation get smarter. This is the first time we're not seeing that. And again, not trying to knock on younger people. Life has been weird for all of us, right?
Yes.
But this is, you know, and so I do think that was already a problem. It's just now we're noticing it more. Because, like, I mean, I think about it. My son constantly is like, I don't let him normally watch YouTube. So he'll come to me and say, like, hey, can I find a video to teach me this chord on my guitar.
Cool.
And I'm like, you literally have guitar books. So it's things like that of, I think it was a problem that already existed, like I said. And I do think, you know, we do have to tackle this larger problem of how are we going to encourage and promote critical thinking. But I think also what's going to happen is there's going to be a widening gap, unfortunately, where you're going to have the people who go above and beyond to who do all that. And then you'll have kind of the people who don't, who just go to YouTube to learn how to play that chord. And again, not trying to knock on my son. He's very smart. I'm very proud of him. But, you know, I think that it's already been going that way because of the internet and social, and it isn't just LLMs. You know, there's also a part of me that's really panicky, and I'm like, are we going to end up in the world of WALL-E?
Idiocracy. Have you seen that movie?
Yes.
That is so funny. That's a fair point.
Plants crave electrolytes.
Yeah, exactly. That was so funny. That is so funny.
Yeah.
I think this has been going on since the newspaper and also TV and then sitcoms and everything. Talking about critical thinking, I think there is one great place where critical thinking is needed and is inspired, and that is the SMX Advanced. And just talking about this because I think it's a fits in right perfectly. You're speaking at SMX Advanced in Berlin, right?
I am.
So you're coming all the way from Atlanta to Berlin and then to talk about all these amazing topics, which is amazing, by the way. And you've been to so many conferences around the world. Tell us a bit about your perspective on why in this time and age, it makes sense to go to a conference.
I think it's because of how much time we spend online and getting those inhuman experiences. I will say, really, you know, I'm super fortunate. I get to travel a lot. I do a lot of podcasts. I'm heavily involved in the Women in Tech SEO community, like you said, and the SEO community founded by Noah Lerner. You know, a lot of great conversations happen there. But for sure, the best conversations I have are always in person at conferences. Because there's so much that is lost, I think, from being digital. Obviously, we can do a lot of things and it's very cool. You know, I would have never been able to maintain friends who live in Turkey without all this technology. But I think the brainstorming, the strategy breakthroughs that really happen at conferences, that's the best part. Plus, SMX always includes a Q&A. So it also means if you want to stump me with questions or come with what's actually troubling you, you know, maybe you can get some help from the speakers. I think just in person, I'm also an extrovert, so I love people.
Oh, that's amazing. I've been at SMX Advanced a few times. I'm always at SMX Munich, by the way. But SMX Advanced for me is something, a really special place, because all the slots are basically, all the talks are in English, and it really tries to push the boundaries. So all the topics, they don't start off with, what's an H1 heading? They start off with,
right,
you know, okay, let's go deep into schema. That's my first slide. Okay, we're deep in the woods already. So that's what I really like about it. So it's not like...
The topics are amazing.
Yeah, the topics are amazing and it's just experts. And I think it's one of the rare places where you can, without any advertising, go deep into topics and then meet the real people. To be honest, real stars of the industry. Really, like, this is like, if you're really in this space in SEO and SEA, there's real stars there. Like you know, like celebrities. Yeah, I'd consider you one as well, right? Being one of the
celebrities. Oh, that's really sweet. I'm not, but thank you.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, right? So, you know.
Oh, yeah. I've met some of the best people at conferences. You know, getting to meet Mike King in person is always amazing. Brittany Muller.
Yes.
I know Viola Eva is going to be at SMX Advanced. She is incredible. And really, every time I hear her speak, I'm walking away with just like, my head has exploded. I have so many ideas, so many things I want to try. So definitely don't miss her talk. But this is going to be really good.
Exactly. So, everybody who's listening, you should definitely consider coming to SMX Advanced in Berlin. It's it's later this year, so definitely check it out. Sam will be one of the speakers, and I can just highly recommend this. And one more topic I have written down and I find really interesting, and you said that at the beginning as well. we're now in the place where we're not trying to create mass content. I think this strategy was always not a great strategy, but it worked really well, especially for SaaS companies. Yeah. They would all have the same blocks. They would all have Pipedrive versus Sugar CRM and stuff like that. But the question now is, and you said something really interesting. We are now in the phase where we have to create experiences for users and separate experiences for machines. Maybe let's dive into that topic and you explain a bit more your thoughts on this and how you've been working on this and how this has worked for you.
Yeah. And actually, this goes back to some of the testing, and shame on me for not bringing it up. I think it is, you know, we've got the experiences for users, and that's still going to be like your traditional search engines as well, where, you know, is the content engaging? You know, are you using any kind of CRO or UX principles to make sure that, you know, you're grabbing the attention? But there are different things now coming out. So, you know, we have the LLMs.txt. There's a lot of debate on whether it's worth it or not.
What do you think? What do you think?
Honestly, I'm in a place where it takes like 10 minutes. Just try it. Also, there was that study that came out from Ramp not too long ago, which is kind of when I changed my mind. I used to be pretty anti-LLMs.txt.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, just try it.
Yeah.
Because that study found that really the pages that were written in Markdown and things like that had better performance for influencing AI citations and mentions than even structured data, which I love structured data. So that would be kind of the next thing of creating that Markdown experience. Because again, especially if you have a site that depends on JavaScript for a lot of your rendering, that's a really easy way, a pretty low lift to get your content to LLM crawlers at a really easy to consume way without having to basically refactor your entire website. Especially if you're on Cloudflare, they have a beta. You literally just hit a button and a couple buttons after that, but it's like, it's just a toggle. So I think it's interesting to see how the Markdown is coming through, because Markdown also then becomes a lot easier for agents, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have JavaScript? The instructions? Correct. Yeah. So do you have the instructions in your LLMs.txt for an agent to know how to interact with your site? Crystal Carter from Wix, she's got a ton of content on this. It's really, really good. I highly recommend it. But just giving those instructions to agents so they know how to interact with your site.
So the LMS text, there's so many interpretations of it, how it should work. Is it an instruction manual? Is it basically half MCP, or is it more a sitemap that is basically explaining, you can find my About Us page here and you can find my products here and this is what we do, and or is it, I don't know.
All of the above, I think. I think it is a, you know, I think of it as it's the elevator pitch for your company. So if an LLM is going to say, like, who is Pipedrive or what is Pipedrive, I want... like, what's the 30 seconds I would tell them? And then where do I want them to go to get more information? Like, for example, we just launched a WhatsApp integration. That is absolutely in my LLMs.txt because I want to make sure that's getting picked up in the LLMs. So I think it's a little bit of that. And then it is also the instruction manual for here's how to interact with the site. Here's how to do different things, which is going to be the agent instructions, and also dovetails into MCP. They're very closely related in this perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of all of them. Now for us, like I said, we don't have a whole lot of instructions for agents yet, because that's still a business decision that's being made, like I say, above my pay grade. So for us, it's mostly just a here's who we are, here's what we specialize in. And then, like, here's what we know are the most common questions that users have. So that's what we put in ours. But like I say, Crystal Carter has really, really good content on how to write agent instructions for LLMs.txt. To answer that question.
Amazing. I love it. Okay. I didn't know this question was going to go to LLMs.txt, but very interesting because my perspective has changed as well. 1 year ago, I said actually at a conference, I wouldn't use it. Because nobody was recognizing it. Now I would say actually the same thing. I would say, like, if it's easy for you to implement, you should definitely use it. But obviously if it's hard to use, then you should not use it, right? And it really depends on how complicated it is to integrate. But obviously, as you just said, it's more like an elevator pitch, so you can just quickly write it and then it's done. So we in Germany, we have this concept of grounding pages, which is very interesting, where we basically talk about how we build about us page that has the entity's mm-hmm. description. And it's very similar to what you just said, what the LMS text is.
Yes. Yeah, I think those are worth it. It's like I said, it's worth testing. This is all kind of unfurling before all of us. None of us have crystal balls. We don't know what's exactly going to happen. I think also the requirement for making sure that your structured data is sound, it has been raised. Like it continues to be an important part because it's just really easy to consume data. And the easier we can make it for these crawlers and these bots to understand our site and understand who we are, just the better it's going to go. If we're making, like, I always try to think about, you know, developers made bots, and the bots are the ones trying to do the work. And as a former developer, I feel like I'm allowed to say, we are inherently lazy people, like you were talking about before. Like, there is a reason I automate as much of my life as I can. And it's because I do want to sit down more often, right? So, you know, if these bots, we have to assume that they are also inherently lazy, that they just want to get the answers as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So the more we make that easier, the better. And then with your structured data, it is, you know, do you have that full entity mapping, right? There's a lot more in schema.org than just what Google accepts. And I think people should really investigate that and see, like, are there better definitions for who we are, what we do? It may not mean a SERP feature, but it probably means increased understanding about who you are and what you offer. And then that also dovetails to a new standard that's come out called NL Web. It is actually made by the same guy who made schema.org. He's doing it with Microsoft. And NL Web is just another format for instructing how to interact with your website in a natural language format. It's very similar to schema. It's pretty easy for developers to implement. So, you know, majority of the time, it's just like, here's the GitHub repo. Tell your engineering to do this. Is usually the instructions as a technical SEO. I wouldn't expect a tech SEO to actually like code and put that in. But that is a new standard that's coming out. And because it does have the backing of Microsoft, and it is from this one gentleman, and I cannot pronounce his name correctly, so I'm not even going to try to butcher it. But, you know, he's obviously changed the world a couple times over with schema.org and all the work that he's done for web standards. I think there's a lot of these things that are coming out that it's worth testing to see how it helps. Yeah. We'll see what wins out. And I also circle back to the LMS.txt argument. I was right there with you. I was like, why would we do it? I don't understand. Like, this is silly. But also, like, robots.txt as a standard was only finalized like in the last 5 years. So, and how long were we using robots.txt before that happened? A lot longer than 5 years. So, you know, this whole argument of nobody's using it, it's not standardized. A lot of the internet isn't standardized. That's why we have like caniuse.com, because each browser renders things differently. So why not test it and try it? And like you said, it's pretty easy to write up. I actually used Claude to write ours. I don't know if I should have said that.
I mean, that makes sense.
I don't know how PipeJar feels about that.
No, but it's that's you've obviously written in your life so many redirects, right? 301 redirects, like in a HT access file. So you make one mistake and the whole file is broken and it gives you no reporting where it is.
Yes.
I have spent hours testing complicated HT access files with going line by line. This has changed a lot. Now I just push that into Claude and it's like, we're done. And it's just easy semantic mistakes that can be found so easily, but obviously also logic mistakes. And I think that is something that is genius. And that's why I would probably not tell Claude, hey, write me any robots.txt file, but I would probably tell Claude, hey, I want this to be, you know, these files to be locked out, make a great regular expression in a robots.txt file. and summarize that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that is great because the mistakes I've seen on robots.txt files is insane and on htaccess files. And this should reduce it by a lot.
Oh, yeah. Regex, I feel like I don't even write it myself anymore, which I guess is kind of sad.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because it's a great skill.
But yeah, I don't need to. And I also think about, coding and especially JavaScript, which I could probably give a whole nother hour long podcast episode on why I hate JavaScript. but like so many times coding that myself and like you just miss a semicolon.
Yes.
And the whole thing breaks and the error code is not helpful at all. No.
Totally useless.
It really has changed the game.
It has.
So much. Yeah.
That's why, I really like that. So schema.org, I have a biased opinion on this. I think it's very hard to implement for most sites. It's very difficult and they have a very hard time. And then I think some tags really help, but others are kind of like, I'm not sure if they have the right impact, but time will tell. You know, as soon as the data supports it, I'm all in for it again.
Yeah, I do think that's key. It's also a very easy rabbit hole to fall down and never come out of because there are so many different types.
Oh, yeah.
So I do think that's one of those things where, you know, the intermediate SEOs versus the seniors, I think really a lot of the times the difference between those is just the knowing when to crawl out of the rabbit hole. When have you gone far enough? But, you know, definitely I've seen a lot of times where just adding this little bit of a definition really clarifies who you are and what you offer. You know, especially when it comes to anything that's your money, your life, so finance, healthcare. Being as clear and concise but precise as possible can help so much in making sure you're showing up in the right spaces. And like I said, I am biased. I love schema. I think it's great. I do have a lot of thoughts for how to implement it and make it more scalable. But yeah, maybe that'll be the next SMX. I'll talk about that.
Yeah. did we miss anything that experience we have to create for the machines? Did we miss any points there?
Let's see. LMs.txt, markdown, schema, LLAP. No, I think that's it. I do think it is interesting, though, that we're going back to this idea of having two separate experiences. And there is a part of me that really doesn't like that. Because I remember when Pigeon came out and it was just like, hallelujah, we no longer have to have pages dedicated to misspellings.
That was great.
But, you know, I think at the end of the day, we also need to accept that users are now going to be interacting with our websites through their chats.
Yeah, which
is
great.
And it's not going to be the same thing as actually going to our site. I think Mike King even has a prediction that brands won't even need websites in the future.
Yes.
Which is a bit, it's Mike King. Happen. He likes to stir the pot.
This will happen, and it will take half of the time that the yellow pages disappeared, but it will take some time. So, to be honest, like if you look at large corporations, and every large corporation that's listening right now can definitely probably relate or feel a little bit offended, but they are so big that they probably have just launched their page maybe 2 years ago. They're like, oh yeah, we had a web page, then we relaunched it. We relaunched it again, and now we finally have the version we actually wanted. And they're like 20 years late. And I'm not saying that this is going to be Apple or Microsoft. They're way far ahead. But I'm talking about like these really like big corporates like BP or something like that. But I'm talking about British Petrol. So for them, it's going to take a long time to go there with a new technology. It's going to take less time than it did the first time, right? So internet took them 20 years. AI will not take them 20 years. It will probably only take 5. But I do not see... So there will be some kind of version where you as a company have to host information about yourself. And you have to host information about your products you're offering, the things you stand for, the opening times you have, and some other stuff. And this, as long as there is nothing like a business Facebook where you just upload your data and you're done... This will kind of like be the server where your website is hosted on. And it can be just an MCP. It can be the business entry in Google, but it most probably at the moment will be the website. So I understand Mike 100%, and he's so smart. So
he is.
There's truth to this, but it will take some time.
I agree. Also, I feel like what you just said, maybe it'll be the next product that Meta comes out with, because I feel like they're just pumping out all kinds of products. Yeah. Some of them, I'm like, that was an interesting choice. Not what I would have done, but go you. I agree.
So if you think about blogs dying, so all the blogs, there was a real blogger community out there. It's gone. Mm-hmm. It's all, it went into Medium, it went into Instagram, it went into Facebook, it went into TikTok. That's where the bloggers are now. That's where the content creators are. So bloggers were content creators, old content creators, right? So they were assembled on these platforms, and these platforms made a huge money out of this. But obviously, like, all these unique experiences have vanished, and now they're in walled gardens. And I think one of the products could be exactly this, like hosting your data for AIs, maybe on Google, maybe on ChatGPT, who knows? And that's how you get presented, right? And then somehow maybe a vetting process or something. I do see this as a possible future. And then you don't need a website, as you don't need a website if you have, if you're a content creator, you just have Instagram and you have 3 million followers. You don't need a website, right? You only need a link tree.
Exactly.
And no, I don't want to say it.
Yeah. It is going to be interesting to see too how, because, you know, we're talking about LLM crawlers. They're going to need to start, I think they're going to need to start rendering JavaScript so that they can get more content. But then from there, how do they also start consuming video content? Because it's exactly like you said, that's where most creation is happening.
Yes.
You know, Google obviously can lean on a lot of the data that they get from YouTube. So that's also why I think Google's here forever. Oh,
they're in such a great position.
Oh, they really are. But, you know, and obviously they can consume video content, because you look at, you know, if you upload a video on YouTube, they make captions for you in like 2 minutes. But it'll be interesting to see, like, how does that continue to grow? How does that technology grow, become more affordable? How does consuming that start impacting answers? And I mean, it's going to be, SEO's never been boring.
No, it hasn't.
And that's one of my favorite and least favorite things about the job. No, actually, it's one of my favorites, but it certainly does sometimes make it a little tiring.
Yeah, it does. Sam, it's been amazing talking to you. Really, thank you for all these answers and insights. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you at SMX Advanced. And everybody who's listening should definitely connect you. Sam, where can we connect you if somebody wants to get in touch?
You can find me on LinkedIn. And then also, like I said, in those two communities, Women in Tech SEO, if you identify as female or non-binary, please, please join. It's free. We're amazing. We're super supportive. We do all kinds of fun stuff. And then there's also the SEO community by Noah Lerner. I'm pretty active in both of those. So you can always ask me questions in those slots as well.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. And let's see where it takes us in 1 year. We'll have more answers and probably much more questions. But that's
so many more questions. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you so much for taking your time for this SMX special. And have a great day. It's probably the start of your day now in Atlanta. And for me, it's nearly the end. So take care and see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Das war's für diese Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Bis zur nächsten Folge.